Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about doing the hard work to implement freedom, being that vigilant, that eternally vigilant patriot. Because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. But we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. Exodus 15:3, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. Are we warriors? So today, I am not going to do a briefing. I'm going to do a briefing on one situation that is a breaking national news story. This is a game changer. This is going to forever change those of you that may have been on the fence about certain aspects in the Bundy case, the Nevada case down going on right now down in Nevada, and also change your perspective on where we are at with some bureaucrats in government. Or maybe it'll just reinforce your perspective. But either way, this is a breaking story, and we just did a Facebook Live. I did it with Readout News and Sherry Duvalli to explode this. I'm going to be posting the document that I'm going to be referring to here up on Facebook here in the next few minutes. But we're trying to get Sherry Duvalli on the line right now, and I don't know if she's on yet or not. Sherry, are you there?
So it looks like she's. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect. So, pretty exciting afternoon. So, let's just get kind of right into this. I'm going to go into this document that I obtained early this morning that is the smoking gun in the Bundy Ranch case. I don't think that that's hyperbole. I mean, what are your thoughts about the importance of this document and why the American people need to know?
I think this is one of the most important documents that will have come out in this decade, if not this century. This highlights so many egregious violations on the part of our government representatives against the American people. Everybody needs to be aware of what has happened and read this document for themselves.
Well, I can't underscore that enough, folks. If you have family members, if you have business partners, employees, whatever, they want to listen to what we are about to break nationally, and it is a bombshell. It is unbelievable, and I should say bombshell. Everybody use that word. This is really a game changer. This proves, or at least points us in the direction of saying that there are things that some of us have believed that are now being borne out in this document. It's incredible. So without further ado, I've obtained a communication. It appears it's an email between Larry Wooten, special agent for the U.S. Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management. Okay, so Larry Wooten, special agent. Remember that name because he is a whistleblower. This correspondence is to Andrew D. Goldsmith, who's the Associate Deputy Attorney General. And apparently his task is as the National Criminal Discovery Coordinator. So, Sherry, what does that mean? What is a National Criminal Discovery Coordinator? What does that mean and what does that do?
I really don't know. I'm still learning some of the different positions within their organization. It sounds to me like he's a lead investigator or something. Maybe the guy that all of the investigators report to.
Well, it sounds like he maybe coordinates, you know, with the investigators on all of the information that the government discloses to defense attorneys in prosecutions. I mean, that's you know, I don't know exactly what he does either, but that seems from his title what he does. So Special Agent Wooten has sent this correspondence, and we have confirmed the veracity of this document, but I want to read a few things from this and then get your reaction, Sherry, because, I mean, some of this is just startling. Quote, "I routinely observed, and the investigation revealed," and he's referring to the Bundy Ranch investigation. Again, this Special Agent Wooten to Andrew D. Goldsmith. Quote, "I routinely observed, and the investigation revealed, a widespread pattern of bad judgment, lack of discipline, incredible bias, unprofessionalism and misconduct, as well as likely policy, ethical, and legal violations among senior and supervisory staff at the BLM's Office of Law Enforcement and Security." So that's a stunning statement. That is a stunning statement.
Does it say in that letter that he is only investigating the Bureau of Land Management? And I ask because there are several departments involved in this case.
It says, as a U.S. Department of Interior, Bureau of Land Management, Office of Law Enforcement and Security Special Agent, and then he was the case agent and lead investigator for the Bundy case when he wrote this. But it doesn't look like any other agents, just mentions that one.
Okay.
But you've been hearing rumors down there that there is some sort of an attempt to get this case dismissed, and this might be one of the reasons why this correspondence.
Absolutely. We've been hearing for a couple of weeks now that the case will very likely be dismissed, but nobody knew why. The reason nobody knows anything is this particular case in the courtroom, it has been sealed more than it's been opened, I think. There have been so many sealed hearings and so much sealed evidence, there is absolutely no transparency. Even though the Sixth Amendment guarantees the right to a public trial, this trial has had very little public involvement. You know, the public has not been able to watch everything that the government is doing, and it certainly seems like the government has not been following their own laws if we go based on what we heard you read.
Well, I pulled this up before the show, and this is a quote actually from the Public Records Act here in Washington State, and I think this is really good. I'd like to get your reaction to this too. "The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies that serve them. The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what it is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so that they may maintain control over the instruments that they have created." What's your reaction to that?
It sounds to me like Washington is on the ball. Yeah. Well, they, go ahead.
At least on this one thing, maybe.
I would definitely like to see if anything like that is in some of the other affected states. And I say affected states, it's actually the entire country. I'm thinking mostly of the western states because this goes right down to property rights, water rights, land rights, which are the bigger issues in the western states. Though all of this is going to affect every single state in the union.
So, you know, Washington has 435,000 acres managed by the BLM. I think it's a total of 12 million federal acres, but 435,000 by the BLM. And you know, BLM has not just a relationship with, you know, state agencies, but also with the citizenry. I mean, these kind of accusations from a whistleblower internal to the Bureau of Land Management, I mean, this affects every American. It really does.
Yes, it does. It scares the heck out of me.
Well, let's...
go ahead.
Well, let's go through a couple more of these things and get your reaction to a couple more of these statements in here. Quote, "When I reported these issues, my supervisor seemed generally unsurprised and uninterested and was dismissive and seemed unconcerned," end quote. Then goes on to say, "The longer the investigation went on, the more extremely unprofessional, familiar, racy, vulgar, and bias-filled actions, open comments, and inappropriate electronic communications I was made aware of where I personally witnessed. The ridiculousness of the conduct, unprofessional, amateurish, carnival atmosphere, openly made statements and electronic communications tended to mitigate the defendant's culpability. They're speaking of the Bundys, and cast a shadow of doubt of inexcusable bias, unprofessionalism, and embarrassment on our agency, end quote. That seems like, I mean, that seems like the judge would have to dismiss based on something like that if that was entered into evidence.
Well, at this point, the defense is going to have this information. There's no chance that it's going to be buried in, even in the sealed hearing. The judge is going to have to react, and she's, going to be held accountable for her actions as well as everybody else.
Well, go ahead.
No, that's all right. Go right ahead.
Well, we don't know if, because there's been so many sealed hearings, we don't know if this has been introduced as evidence, but if it hasn't, it surely should be, but
At this point, Matt, if they have not introduced it, they will after today, I'm sure.
I'm sure. I'm positive. Well, let's get into a couple more. So, you have kind of this document outlines some basic things. So it outlines what Special Agent Wooten says is unethical, potentially illegal behavior. Talks about, this attempt to essentially paint the at least a couple people involved in the case, and we'll get to that here in a second, in a light that may portend harm, and I'll that's a little bit vague, but I'll get to that here in a second, what that means. Then there's the allegation of withholding exculpatory evidence. There's the allegation of sexual misconduct, and then talking about some of the snipers down there. But I want to talk about this sexual misconduct that's alleged in this letter. The misconduct caused, this is again a quote, the misconduct caused considerable disruption in our workplace, was discriminatory, harassing, and showed clear prejudice against the defendants, their supporters, and Mormons. Oftentimes, this misconduct centered on being sexually inappropriate, profanity, appearance/body shaming, and likely violated privacy and civil rights. Extremely biased and degrading flyers were also openly displayed and passed around the office. A booking photo of Clive and Bundy was and is inappropriately, openly, prominently, and proudly displayed in the office of a potential trial witness and my supervisor and an altered degrading suspect photos were put in an office presentation by my supervisor. Additionally, this investigation also indicated that former BLM special agent in charge Dan Love sent photographs. I mean, this is horrible, of his own excrement and his girlfriend's genitalia to coworkers and subordinates. End quote. I mean, oh my goodness.
I mean, that's horrible. That's awful.
Well, and if he's alleging this, right? If this special agent is alleging this, you got to wonder what the investigation was into this. And he actually mentions a little bit later in this communication, quote, my supervisor even instigated the unprofessional monitoring of jail calls between defendants and their wives without prosecutor or FBI consent for the apparent purpose of making fun of post-arrest telephone calls between Idaho defendants /FBI targets. So they're monitoring the phone calls apparently, at least what he's alleging, not a professional purpose.
That's awful. It's bad enough that these guys that are behind bars do not have their full rights, and just based on the circumstances. I mean, they understand they're in jail. They don't have every right that they would normally enjoy. But to be violated more than, what the law allows, this is a violation. This is a personal violation against not just the inmate, but against, the person they're speaking to on the phone, be it their family or whoever. The law doesn't allow for that. Did anybody stop that behavior? Does it mention that in the report?
Well, it doesn't really seem to, as I read through it, it doesn't seem that you know, anything really happened out of this. And I get to a couple of points that he makes later. I mean, at the very least, this warrants a further investigation by Congress. And I for one, think that needs to happen, that Congress needs to investigate this. But he goes on in here and talks about some other interesting things where Special Agent Wooten apparently talks about a, quote, religious test of sorts, end quote, where he was asked, quote, are you, I'm sorry, you're not a Mormon, are you, end quote. And then, let's see, this says, quote, I bet you think I'm going to hell, don't you, end quote. So he kind of figured that or felt like that was a religious test internal to the office, which is also, you know, similarly alarming allegation, you know, because our Constitution specifically talks about religious tests.
And I certainly would have taken it that way myself.
Right. The other interesting part about this, and this is where it kind of gets into, I think, kind of the more, this is the thing that is probably the most shocking part of this document. If the other stuff isn't, this is probably the most shocking. Quote, the investigation also indicated that on multiple occasions, former BLM special agent in charge, Love, specifically and purposely ignored the U.S. attorney, U.S. attorney's office and BLM civilian management direction and intent, as well as Nevada state official recommendations in order to command the most, quote, again, this is a quote direct, most intrusive, oppressive, large-scale and militaristic trespass cattle impound possible. So in other words, he's alleging that the Love did this intentionally, like set this up as a major thing intentionally to like make an example out of the Bundys. That's the implication.
Well, I can certainly see that, but there's one other contradictory piece of evidence. I was in the courtroom when Dan Love testified via Skype from Utah, and he was angry. He was angry and ready to blow the whistle on his superiors, and he basically said that he was angry because he was supposed to be, you know, the incident commander. He was labeled the incident commander. He was the special agent in charge, but he had to take orders from the higher up, from people in D.C. They were the ones actually giving the orders. So it's going to be interesting to see at what point Dan Love's authority stopped and the others took over.
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of questions being raised now, and the fact that he was granted qualified immunity with these allegations hovering out there, and these are not even allegations that were made public surrounding his firing, you know, that were reported in the press. These are allegations that have not even come to light yet.
Yeah, he was the Red family, R-E-D-D. Dr. Red was one of the victims of Dan Love, and the Red family filed suit, but it was thrown out by... I believe it went all the way up to the Ninth Circuit that affirmed his Dan Love's qualified immunity and said that nobody can go after him.
Well, that might change after what we're about to break right now. Further on in this document, page 6, quote, and he's speaking of his supervisor, says, my supervisor emailed out photographs of the arrest tracking wall in which Eric Parker and Cliven Bundy had X's through their face and body, and then in parentheses, indicating prejudice and bias, in parentheses, that seems like a little bit more than prejudice and bias. It seems like there was some sort of harm portended by that. But then on page 8, quote, time after time, I was told of former BLM special agent in charge Love's misconduct. And I was told by BLM law enforcement supervisors that he had a kill book. A kill book. This is a direct quote from this communication as a trophy. And in essence, bragged about getting three individuals in Utah to commit suicide. And then cites in parentheses Operation Cerberus, Failure Rock, and then mentions Burning Man below that. But the one Operation Cerberus, that was where Dr. Red was involved, right?
Yes, it is. And your listeners can go to Readout News and Google Dan Love or search Dan Love's name there and find the story there. They can even go and Google Dan Love because that story is all over the internet. It was horrible. This poor family has no recourse based on the court's rulings, but Dan Love should be held accountable for the atrocious acts that he committed against the family.
So this is just unreal because in the same paragraph, he goes on with, quote, directing subordinates to erase official government files in order to impede the efforts of rival civilian BLM employees in preparation for the Burning Man special event, unlawfully removing evidence, bragging about the number of OIG and internal investigations on him, and indicating that he is untouchable, encouraging subordinates not to cooperate with internal and OIG investigations, his harassment of a female Native American subordinate employee, where Mr. Love allegedly had a doll that he referred to by the employee's name and called her his, this is a quote, okay, drunk little Indian, et cetera, end quote. I mean, these are horrific allegations contained in this communication.
I find some of that personally offensive, just based on my heritage. He doesn't leave anybody out, does he? He just, just trashes everybody, in his wake. He doesn't leave anybody standing.
So Special Agent Wooten on February 18, 2017, was removed from his position as the case agent or lead investigator, despite, and this is from his own, this is quote, despite my recently documented and awarded hard work and excellent and often praised performance. And then he says, I'm convinced that I was removed to prevent the ethical and proper further disclosure of the severe misconduct, failure to correct and report, and cover-ups by BLM OLES supervision. Wow. I mean, so he was actually removed when they thought that he might actually bring the truth out. At least that's what he's claiming.
Do you know anything about the federal whistleblower laws? Because I don't know enough, and obviously I'm going to do some research. But
well, typically there can't be retaliation if you bring something to the attention of your superiors, like what he's alleging.
And it's the superiors that had him dismissed.
This is there's a couple more points on here. We've got about 5 minutes left, but there's a couple more points on here. I'd like to, have you comment on. One of them is, quote, I became convinced that my supervisor failed to properly disclose substantive and exculpatory case and witness bias related issues to the U.S. Attorney's Office. That's a very serious charge, actually, or allegation, because there's a duty to disclose exculpatory evidence or evidence that tends to prove the defense's case. There's a duty to disclose that. Has this, as you've followed this, has that come out in other places in the trial?
Well, it's been hinted at, certainly. And I've received information, but I'm very careful about making sure I can document everything that I report. And it's very hard to document things when everything is done behind closed doors in sealed hearings. But yes, I have heard reports that the prosecution has not turned over all of their evidence. Now, I can report on some specific items, such as Ryan Bundy asked about the cameras that were surveilling his family's home while his family were in the home. He asked about that several months ago in a motion, and the prosecution responded basically calling it a fishing expedition. But that has since been proven that not only were there cameras, but the prosecution knew it.
And then didn't disclose it.
They did not disclose it. And when it was brought up, they tried to budget a little here and a little there, such as, okay, there's only one camera, and it was taken down every night. But that proved also not to be true. So the prosecution has not been transparent, and I do not believe they followed all of their ethics rules that they're required to do. So I think that gives a very good case for dismissal, and I would hope that it could benefit other defendants, not just the four in this particular trial.
Well, here's the interesting part about it, too, is he actually mentions kind of one of the more egregious allegations in regards to disclosure. Quote, Dave Bundy's seized iPad likely contained remarks from BLM law enforcement officers that is potentially evidence of civil rights violations and excessive use of force. Mr. Myrie and my supervisor not only apparently failed to initiate the proper appropriate follow-on actions, Mr. Myrie apparently failed to notify the defense counsel and also decided not to return the iPad back to Dave Bundy, even though the iPad wasn't going to be searched pursuant to a search warrant or used as evidence in trial that Dave Bundy claimed he needed the iPad for his business. So that's kind of what he's, end quote, and that's what he's alleging is kind of the more egregious violation of non-disclosure. But who is Myrie?
Stephen Myrie is the current acting U.S. attorney who is filling in since they got rid of Daniel Bogden and they have not replaced him. He is now the acting U.S. attorney for Nevada, and he is also the lead prosecutor on this case. He's been involved in it since day one.
So, you know, at the very least, this warrants an investigation by Congress. I think, obviously, the Trump administration, Secretary Zinke, have been doing a good job when things have been brought to their attention to root out bad actors. And certainly, it's my trust and confidence that they will do the right thing here. But it gets to the last thing, and this was kind of something I said when I was down there, that a sniper rifle is not due process. And the government kind of took the position that there weren't really sniper rifles down there. Can you comment on that before I read what I'm about to read?
There were definitely sniper rifles down there, and they were pointed at unarmed men, women, and children.
So as you observe the trial, the government tried to downplay that? I mean, what happened there?
First, they tried to deny it. They would not, in the previous trials, they wouldn't even allow it to be brought up. Eric Parker was going to take the stand in his own defense, and he started to, and he was going to impeach the testimony of a government witness, and he said that, all he said was that he was looking up and to the right. The judge shut him down and removed him from the stand because she was afraid he might say the word sniper.
So,
he was already told he wasn't allowed to. He was not allowed to use the word sniper. But she was afraid he might slip up and say so she removed him from the stand and would not let him continue testifying.
So, again, the principle that a sniper rifle is not due process. I want to read the quote. Again, this is from, if you're just joining us, from this correspondence that I obtained from Larry C. Wooten, Special Agent for the U.S. Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management, to Andrew D. Goldsmith, Associate Deputy Attorney General, National Criminal Discovery Coordinator. I think that Criminal Discovery Coordinator is a person that kind of oversees the evidence that's disclosed to the defense. But I want to read this other quote in here from Special Agent Wooten. Quote, the investigation indicated that there was at least one school-trained federal sniper equipped with a scope-magnified optic bolt-action precision rifle, another federal officer equipped with a scope-magnified optic large-frame AR-style rifle, and it says parentheses 308 caliber, were in overwatch positions. Additionally, the investigation also indicated the possibility that the FBI and the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and law enforcement snipers designated marksmen on hand for possible deployment, end quote. That conclusively proves there were not only snipers down there, multiple snipers, they were in overwatch positions, and there were some that were prepared to be deployed against American citizens.
And the government would like you to believe that they could never do anything like that.
This is, the fact that he blew the whistle on this, and again,
this man is a hero. This man is a hero, and he needs to be treated as a hero, not as an enemy of the state, which is what they seem to be treating him as by dismissing him from his position.
Well, I just want to, you know, end with, I mean, the fact that this whistleblower in this communication alleges, you know, sexual misconduct, withholding exculpatory evidence, an arrest tracking wall with X's through Clive and Bundy's face and Eric Parker's face, the allegation that Special Agent in Charge Love had a kill book, the allegation that snipers were indeed down there, and most people knew that they were, and that there was unethical and potentially illegal behavior. Sherry, what is Readout? I mean, you guys have been doing a great job bringing this to the public, but what is Readout News going to be doing to get this in front? I'll tell you what I think a lot of representatives need to do is write to their congressman, congresswoman, to demand an investigation into this, and also to the Trump administration, to Secretary Zinke. I mean, what are you guys going to be doing? And have you had any reaction to this breaking story?
Well, you know, you only just broke it here, you know, a short time ago. But yes, my phone is blowing up with messages, and some of them appear to be from elected officials. So we will be doing as much as we can to get this. And, you know, as soon as you share the document, get this document to every elected official in every state at the federal level and at the state level. Because the state level, you know, as you well know, there, you know, politics are local. It needs to start at the lower level and keep the pressure going up.
This is, again, this is just unbelievable. I really appreciate you, Sherry, everything you're doing. I know you got to get off the phone, and now you're gonna have a ton of things you got to deal with. But I really want to thank you for bringing forward the stories about the trial, and thank you for taking my phone call today when I had obtained this information, because this is the smoking gun. There is just no question about it. This is the smoking gun in the Bundy Ranch trial.
Yes, it is, and this trial is so very important. Because of the constitutional violations, we cannot be a republic without our Constitution.
Amen. Sherry Duvalli, thank you very much. God bless you, and God bless Readout News. Keep up the fight. Wow, what a day.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. All right. Well, that's why I did not do the briefing today. That's why I went straight into it. If you just joined us, we broke a story. This is going to be a national news story on correspondence between Special Agent Larry C. Wooten and Andrew D., who is a Special Agent for the U.S. Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management, to Andrew D. Goldsmith, the Associate Deputy Attorney General, who is the National Criminal Discovery Coordinator, with some extraordinarily serious allegations in the Bundy investigation. Everything he's alleging, from sexual misconduct to withholding exculpatory evidence to the confirmation there were indeed sniper rifles and snipers down at Bundy Ranch aimed at American citizens, to the fact that there was the allegation of an arrest wall that had Clive and Bundy's picture and Eric Parker's picture up on it with X's through it, and that Special Agent in Charge Dan Love, who's now former Special Agent, had a quote kill book, end quote. Unbelievable that we're talking about this in today's day and age. And I hope everyone out there understands that this type of information is what gets the hackles up of the powers to be sometimes. And I want to be very clear on Patriot Radio right now. I don't want to be overly dramatic. But the fact that he bragged, and this is again a quote out of this correspondence, he bragged, quote, about getting three individuals in Utah to commit suicide, end quote, speaking of BLM Special Agent in Charge Love's misconduct. And this again is from Special Agent Larry Clint Wooten. I want everybody out there to know that I take those kind of things very seriously, and that I'm going to say just right now on the radio for everybody to hear, not being overly dramatic, but I have never had or never will have or never had thoughts about committing suicide, Never had any sort of inclination toward that. I am an evangelical Christian. I've given my life to Jesus Christ. I also have had my computer forensically swept of inappropriate images that could have been planted there. There were nothing there, and I don't have any, never had any inappropriate images. I love my wife dearly, and I'm a family guy. So I want to say that on the record, okay, because this evidence and this correspondence are so dramatic that this is where, you know, strange things start happening, and I want to be very clear out front of where I stand as a Christian, and to leave no doubt in anybody's minds about that. And I just think that something like this is so important. We need to bring it out to the American people because, you know, we have in this country an idea that transparency, that we need to know what the government's doing so we can hold them accountable as a basic foundational thing. We have also a basic foundational idea that the government exists to protect the rights of life, liberty, property, the ability to defend the same, among many other rights, of the people. That's why government exists. And so when government starts to not protect the rights, but is alleged to have gone after intentionally the rights of the people, then it needs to be reined back in. And that's, I know what the Trump administration is doing in a lot of areas. So with that, I'm going to bring our guest on today, Michael Bolden with the 10th Amendment Center, who has been doing so much in reasserting sovereignty of the states and also, you know, turning the needle back to where it should be. And that is kind of representative government closest to the people. Michael, great to have you back on Patriot Radio today. How are you doing?
Good to be here, Matt. Last one was your anniversary episode. So that was really cool. Thank you for having me on again.
It was. Well, hey, thanks for being patient. That was a breaking national news story. I mean, it's just, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, you know, but I
no,
am.
No, does this stuff ever cease to amaze you? I'm hearing about it as I'm waiting in the queue here from you. And like, as you're talking about, oh, I have never thought about suicide, I immediately thought, uh-oh, there's a problem here. Because the only time someone like you is going to say that is, just to get a public record that you're protecting yourself from some kind of shenanigans. So it's pretty insane, isn't it?
It is insane, and we're going to be posting that document up on Facebook here in a bit. But take a look at it when you can. But let's talk about the 10th Amendment movement and kind of this push to decentralize control and power. Where do things stand across the United States right now? What are some issues that have come up that people should know about? You know, as far as the 10th Amendment movement is concerned, and then we can talk a little bit also about the NSA. And I watched A Good American the other night, and boy, did that open my eyes.
Man.
Anyway, if you could, go ahead and just let the listeners know a little bit about what's going on.
Well, the cool timing is that tomorrow, December 15th, is the 226th anniversary of the ratification of the Bill of Rights. That was December 15th, 1791. You know, you're going to hear in schools people talking about, oh, today's Bill of Rights Day, you know, freedom of speech, and government provides you all these rights, and they usually teach it backwards. So for us, every single day of the year is Bill of Rights Day. Every day of the year is Constitution Day. And our work focuses on educating the general public on the proper role of government under the Constitution and, more importantly, what you do about it when the federal government overreaches those limitations, which is, I mean, what is the Book of Federal Regulations? I think it's like 30,000, something like that. The founders would be, I mean, if they're not already turning in their graves, they certainly should be, you'd think. The federal government had delegated to them in the Constitution about 30 to 33 powers, depending on how you count them through the document, the bulk of which are in Article 1, Section 8. And most of what the federal government has done in modern times is certainly a violation of those limits.
Well, you know, people will say, oh, that's anti-government. I love government, man. I do. I love government. We just want it to stay within the bounds
it's
supposed to.
Can I excerpt that and make a political ad for whoever primaries you next time, Matt? Because
but it's
first,
true.
You're not committing suicide. Now you're loving government. Well, okay. I mean, I know where you're coming from. Certainly. to a certain crowd, saying that your anti-government is an evil thing. Well, I certainly am anti all these government programs. If they want to call me that and say that I'm a bad guy, then I guess we can wear it as a badge of honor, right? We're pro-constitutional government. We're in favor of government doing the things that it's supposed to be doing and nothing more. The unfortunate thing is it's so busy doing everything else that it can't even do its own job properly. Sanctuary cities, for example. If the federal government was just doing its job on the borders, then the issue of the left-leaning cities that are, or the liberal cities that are doing this on sanctuary, whatever you want to call it, the point would be moot. It wouldn't have happened in the first place. So we have to look to the source of the problem always. And in general, if you follow that trail, you're going to find that the federal government either abdicated its duty to do something properly, or it overstepped and did something it shouldn't be doing in the first place.
Well, and that, you know, the problem is where it's supposed to be operating legitimately, right? Which is what we want.
Right.
Yeah, so there's going to be programs out there that are not legitimate. You know, we want it to operate legitimately. When they don't, that actually casts a pall over all operations by the governing, right? I mean, you know, all those agents, everybody get kind of broad brushed because there were bad actors in what agency?
Well, hey, I do that with the ATF all the time. So I can't think of someone who works for an agency who shouldn't exist, who I wouldn't rather get a real job. I mean, certainly. I mean, obviously, there are good people. And we can say that there's a few bad apples. But when you're talking about maybe a few bad apples in an agency like ATF, which should be abolished, not reformed, not moved to a different department, shouldn't exist in any way whatsoever, then it just becomes the broad brush becomes much easier, certainly.
Yeah, and, you know, some of it, too, is where you have agencies that are really legitimate, you know, not legitimately constitutional. They just aren't. You know, they try to hamstring it in somewhere, you know, or they try to shoehorn it in. Well, it kind of is constitutional because of this, you know, and that actually from the very outset, I think, gets people to the point where they're, you know, there's a lack of trust, there's a breach of trust, because if you're not following the Constitution, then, you know, you're already eroding the fabric that's supposed to hold us all together as Americans.
Yeah, and the Constitution is what I think makes it so beautiful, and that's, you know, we can call it 10th Amendment Day tomorrow, that's part of Bill of Rights Day, is that we can acknowledge, I think, Matt, you and I, we can acknowledge that there are a lot of people out there who don't agree with us on the proper role of government. Whether they are okay with the Constitution or they agree with our viewpoints on the Constitution or not, they like the founders or not, they want government to do a lot of stuff. Well, that's the founders understood that this is really a possibility. When you have a large landmass with a lot of people, and we're talking about just a small number of states at the time when the Constitution was ratified and the Bill of Rights, they recognized the only way to have a peaceful coexistence is not to try to force a one-size-fits-all solution on the most important, most divisive issues, but to allow people in each of their own regions, for us it's states, make those decisions on their own. So what's right for South Carolina may not be right for, well, Western Washington, and what's right for Maine may not be right for Southern California, and vice versa. And that's really what can allow over 300 million people, all these different viewpoints, political, economic, religious viewpoints, to live together under maybe a big defense umbrella, in essence, in peace.
You know, we have so many opportunities to rein in, you know, federal overreach, you know, from land management, which I was talking about earlier. But one of the big ones is with the NSA. And, you know, I watched the movie A Good American. I recommend everybody out there over the holidays, just take a couple hours, watch A Good American.
That's the one about Bill Binney, right? I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, about Bill Binney, where, you know, they admit that they're collecting everybody's emails and phone calls, and that they took a different tack than keyword searches, that they actually figured out that it was better to connect the dots in relationships and how often you talk to somebody, what time you talk to them, what mode of communication you talk to them. And that was actually more revealing. Metadata, as we would call it today, is more revealing than actually what necessarily people say, and that you could sift through all that vast amount of data to hone down to the group of people you really need to be monitoring exactly what they're saying. And it was amazing to me that it was just kind of matter of fact. But Bill Binney said, I understood that this was supposed to be used for America's enemies and that people inside of America should have all of their things encrypted. And he actually put the encryption out there, did it, and then it got removed later. And so you have the, you know, you have this encroachment of the federal government into every area of our lives. How do we get, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, talk about forest management or land management. How do we get the federal government out of our lives when it's the NSA, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it becomes a much broader issue. And then you start talking about, I mean, I've been seeing here, I don't know if they have it up in your area yet, but these biometric scanners at it's run by a company called Clear that's partnered with the TSA. You can do a thumb scan or an eye scan in 20, 30 airports around the country. So you get ahead of the line. You know, first, you know, they put in an ineffective government bureaucracy to slow everything down. And then to speed it up, they collect your retinal scans so you can skip past the line. And then we just put out a report recently that Lincoln Motor Company is also going to be collecting on any new Lincoln pushed out in 2018. They can also collect your biometric information in partnership with Clear and then send it to this TSA. I mean, we've all seen these like scary future dystopian films, the Minority Reports and things like that, talking about how, you know, they have a lot of control. They're going to scan everybody where they go, know what you do, what you might do. And it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to say that we're entering that phase already if we're not already there. Frank Church, back in 1975, the Commission on the Power of Federal Surveillance, he said if the wrong hands ever got in control of the government, and some would say that they've been in control for a long time, but this is 1975, he said the power of the NSA at that time, pre-internet, could impose a total tyranny on the country. So here we are, decades later, with much more surveillance powers, the kind of future sci-fi surveillance powers that they actually have. It's a very dangerous situation.
Extremely. And you've had a couple of very innovative ways of checking the National Security Administration, or no such agency. You've had a couple of very innovative ways of putting the NSA in check at the state level, because a lot of people say, ah, oh, it's a federal thing. Why are you guys talking about it?
Always a state-level issue. Always, always, always. We even recently found out, and I'll get into that in more details in a second, there was a commission in North Carolina, a citizens commission in North Carolina, that discovered that a Bush-era rendition and torture flights by the CIA were actually aided by the state of North Carolina. So many things that you would think, oh, the feds are just big, strong, and evil. They really are relying on state and local funding, assistance, and resources for almost everything. And the NSA, you mentioned, this is really the probably my favorite approach to just about anything. And you can apply this to a lot of different things. But it's basically to have states not participate or provide resources to NSA facilities. The most well-known case that we have been working on to apply this to is in Utah, where the massive NSA data center in Bluffdale requires millions of gallons of water to keep their supercomputers operational, cool and operational. Well, the water is being provided by the city of Bluffdale, which is a political subdivision of the state of Utah. Well, under what's known as the anti-commandeering doctrine, this is a legal doctrine that's been validated by the Supreme Court all the way back to 1842. You could just Google anti-commandeering and you would get a PDF that we've put together to explain it. It's generally one of the first two results. And basically, the doctrine reinforces what James Madison wrote about in Federalist 46, saying when the federal government does stuff that you don't want it to do or that it's not supposed to do, one of your four approaches to it should be refuse to cooperate with officers of the union. That's Madison's words. So you put that into practice on the NSA. You don't cooperate by providing the NSA facility the resources it needs to stay open. If Utah says we're not going to give them the water, the NSA facility becomes non-operational.
I love that. And you know, that you know, it's one of those things they probably didn't even think about, right? That was a liability.
Well, I didn't think about it as a liability, but certainly, well, in a way, I'm sorry to jump in there, Matt, but the reason they opened, we started digging after the Snowden leaks. The reason they started searching out for new facilities is because Fort Meade was maxed out. There's a 2006 report in the Baltimore Sun talking about how the NSA headquarters was on the verge of maxing out the Baltimore area power grid. So they were worried about a total, the way the insiders reported on, they said they were concerned about a total shutdown of the agency. So they had to aggressively find new locations. Bluffdale is the most famous one, but there's an even larger one, the Texas Cryptologic Center, just outside San Antonio. It's an old Sony warehouse. The reason that they, and that one just came online the last few years as well. It's a massive facility. And that one relies on the independent electric power grid in Texas. They're getting electricity from the state of Texas. Well, CPF Energy, which is a public-private partnership, whatever you want to call it, partnered with the state. So they certainly know that there's a liability that they may run out of resources like water or power. They went to Utah for cheap water, Texas for cheap independent electricity. But I don't know if they actually thought that, you know, some people would propose the idea of, like, not providing it to them. So I like seeing that happen. But the state of Michigan, just recently, a committee in Michigan just last week passed unanimously House Bill 4430, which would do just this. And although there isn't an NSA facility in Michigan yet, we know NSA is expanding. And so therefore, that would be, if Michigan were to pass this law and get it on the books before NSA even approaches the state at any time, that would basically shut the door on NSA being able to establish anything in that state.
So I love government in its proper role.
Thank you for the bull. I could still excerpt that.
You certainly could. Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have, how can people join the 10th Amendment Center, get involved, and learn more about what you're doing, and actually get it going in their states? Because Patriot Radio is broadcast across a lot of different states, especially on the podcast.
Well, if they want to, I think the first step to do is to learn what we do. And I recommend going to 10thamendmentcenter.com/report. We put out about a 50-page annual report on the status of what we call the nullification movement. It's up to date as of last year. We'll be updating just after Christmas for the year of 2017. That's where you learn about what we're doing on all kinds of issues. And there's all kinds of links there on how to get involved as well.
So what other issues do you see coming up at this next legislative session that people might not have heard of, or kind of your favorite issues that, folks are asserting the 10th Amendment on across the country?
Well, I mean, if we can look back at what the Obama administration did after a while, they started to, as they saw that they were losing, they started to back off on enforcement of federal marijuana prohibition. I think the time is ripe to do the same on the right to keep and bear arms. There are all kinds of gun laws on the books from 1934 to 1968, 86, et cetera, federal gun laws that localities and states should simply stop participating in. And I think this would be a receptive time where you could maybe find that the Department of Justice would be more willing to back off if states simply said, hey, we're no longer helping you. That would be a huge one in my book.
It really would be. How do you think the Trump administration has been faring on kind of, you know, decentralizing, allowing states to arm? I mean, I know on the land use stuff, there's been some significant paring down of the agency and some of the rules that were just super egregious. What are you seeing, though, I mean, kind of from a national perspective?
I mean, there's still 30,000 regulations on the books. I'd like to see them gone. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand necessarily the political climate, what kind of will that takes. But again, there's a lot of federal gun control measures. They've been pushing aggressively to ramp up asset forfeiture and to even do end runs around states that are trying to restrict civil asset forfeiture. Section 702, they're pushing to expand NSA spying and make it permanent. I'm not very happy with be honest with you. And I don't really expect much from Washington, D.C. I don't think we can go to the federal government and rely on the federal government to limit the powers of the federal government. And I think people like Thomas Jefferson and James Madison recognize that as well. And that's why we follow their advice and say that if you really want to get something done, the best strategy, no matter who's in charge in Washington, is really to focus on your state capital or even your local city council.
Amen. I couldn't have said it better, and I really appreciate all the work you're doing. I hope you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays. We we don't get a lot of rest in this line of work, so I hope you get some rest over the holidays.
I promise
man.
I will, and you too. I know the session's coming up, and thank you so much. Merry Christmas back to you.
All right. Take care, and God bless. Michael Bolden, 10th Amendment Center, as always, a terrific guest, talking about some of the things going on across the country to rein in the federal government. And again, I love government in its proper role. I love it. But we need to make sure that we are eternally vigilant. And as I broke at the top of the hour, if you missed it, the smoking gun in the Bundy Ranch case down in Nevada, a communication from Special Agent Larry Clint Wooten, Special Agent with the U.S. Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management, to Andrew D. Goldsmith, Associate Deputy Attorney General, National Criminal Discovery Coordinator, alleging some very, very serious things. You should take a look at the breaking interview. It is on Readout News right now that we did here about an hour and a half ago. Also, I will be posting this communication up. Some things in there are going to shock you, I think, but it should be a reminder to all of us that we can't just get involved and go home. We need to be eternally vigilant, and that truth and justice in this country should always prevail, and that government exists to protect our rights to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same, among many others. And that's government's proper role. And when government stays in its proper role, it is phenomenal. When it does not stay in its proper role, you get the situation that I broke at the beginning of the hour with this special communication that I obtained earlier today. Lord bless you all, and really may God make this generation the greatest one.